poms on long strings, swinging from their pack saddles, carrying huge loads of barley and buckwheat, tea and cloth, up to Tibet to be traded for bales of wool and cakes of salt. The lowest reaches of the valley are so warm and humid that the people can grow bananas. The forest has all the luxuriance of a tropical jungle. In the Chitwan National Park and Valmiki Tiger Reserve, rhinoceros munch the lush vegetation and tigers prowl through the bamboo thickets. But as you ascend into the valley proper, the plants change. By the time you reach an altitude of 1,000 metres, rhododendrons have begun to appear, rather scraggy trees, some 10 metres high, with broad, glossy leaves. In April, they're hung with cascades of scarlet blossom. To these magnificent flowers come tiny sunbirds, their iridescent breast feathers glinting metallically in the sun as they dip their curved beaks into the throat of the blossoms, sipping nectar and obligingly spreading pollen from tree to tree. Langur monkeys come too, but they are pillagers, grabbing handfuls of flowers and cramming them into their mouths. On the ground grow orchids and iris, trumpet-shaped arums and primulas. Where the sun penetrates the canopy and warms a boulder, you may see a little lizard basking. And in the depths of the forest, foraging on the ground or roosting in the trees, you may catch a glimpse of one of the most glorious birds in the world, a tragopan, a pheasant the size of a turkey, with ultramarine wattles and crimson feathers marvellously decorated with chains of white spots. The luxuriance of this forest is created and sustained by abundant rain. The monsoon winds blowing up from India bring clouds swirling up the valley. As they get higher, they get colder and can no longer bear their loads of moisture, shedding them as torrents of rain that make the lower stretches of the Kalikandaki one of the best watered places on earth. But this forest too has its limits. By the time you've trudged up to 2,500 metres, the rhododendrons, in their turn, have disappeared except for a few patches on sheltered slopes. In their place stand conifers, Himalayan fir and Bhutan pine. Their leaves are not broad like those of the rhododendron, which catch snow and sometimes break under the weight of it, but are long, tough needles which shed the snow and can withstand very low temperatures. Among them, if you're very lucky, you might see a little red panda, foxy brown with a furred black-ringed tail and a grizzled head, scrambling through the branches on the lookout for birds' eggs or berries, insects or mice. It moves sure-footedly over the snow-covered ground and the slippery wet branches, for the soles of its feet are covered with woolly hairs, which give it a firm grip. Another half-day of walking, and you emerge from the pine forest. As you leave it, you leave behind all the birds and the mammals that depended on the pine trees directly or indirectly for shelter and food. There is little now on the rocky hillside except a few tussocky plants and an occasional bush of buckthorn or juniper. The river itself has shrunk. Now it is a shallow stream wandering over a waste of gravel. But the valley itself is still immense, its floor still over a kilometre wide. Nor is the river much larger at any other time of the year, for there's little rain up here to feed it, most having been shed at lower altitudes. And this is the first of the puzzles of the Kalikandaki. How could such a huge valley have been cut by such a relatively small river? Wild animals are very scarce indeed up here. It's too cold for any lizards. Nor is there enough food to sustain langur monkeys. Indeed, you may walk all day without seeing any living creature, except for a flight of choughs or ravens, and high above, patrolling the hillsides,